Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there.
This is Capri Cafaro, host of Eat Your Heartland Out. On our next episode, I'll introduce you to Sabrina Service, a third-generation farmer and the herd manager at Hamburg Hills, an organic dairy farm located in Wisconsin, which is part of the Organic Valley Co-op. Sabrina is leading the way for a new generation of young women in farming, going back to work on her family farm. Sabrina, we are so excited to have you on Eat Your Heartland Out today.
Thank you. I'm super thrilled to be here too.
Well, you have such a fun and interesting story as a third generation dairy farmer up in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of folks your age decide not to go back to the family farm and decide to do something totally different. Tell me a little bit about your experience growing up on a farm and maybe then what drew you back in.
Yeah, so I was raised on a farm. My family has been there since the 70s. My grandpa originally bought the farm. My dad came back after he came of age, and him and my mom decided to raise the family there as well. So I have an older brother and a younger brother, and all three of us were raised on farm. So kind of what that means is it's quite the experience, especially in the modern age. But I mean, since we were young, we've been helping with chores. We've been out and about on the farm, dealing with calves, helping dad where he needed us. It's really, really an interesting experience because you're growing up having an occupation, even though you're technically not employed in anything.
Right.
But yeah, I'd say what really was the start for me and my brothers was, I think I was probably in second grade, and they needed help feeding calves at night. And every night, me and my older brother and my younger brother were out in the barn after getting home from school. We'd get off the school bus, mom would give us a little snack, and then we'd go out and we'd do chores for an hour, hour and a half, and we'd feed all the baby calves together. And each of us had our own little job. And my dad credits that a lot to us being able to get along now, but also us really having the work ethic and being willing to come back to the farm later on. We did that job for years. We fed calves every single night of the week, and then we fed them weekend mornings. But yeah, you know, like when kids are, we're probably 5, 8, and 10 years old, and we had to rely on each other to get the job done. And you know, three kids that age don't always get along, but somehow we managed to get through all of that.
And two boys and a girl too. That's its own dynamic.
Yep. No, we had fun doing it. We got in enough trouble, but, and you know, those were different times for the farm. We were a little bit smaller than my dad and my mom are partnership, but my dad's the main operator of the farm. And he was doing a lot of things by himself because we were little and we only had a few employees at the time helping him out. But you know, farming's a labor of love, and all of us were trying to put the love into it, right?
What did that look like for you as far as that love that you put into it as a kid and then later on as a, you know, a teenager?
Yeah. So I love my baby calves. It's taken some time to love them every single day because, you know, sometimes you don't want to go out and do chores, but I love going out and seeing them every day now. Because, you know, when you're little, you love the cute baby animals, right?
So I of course
love going out and seeing my baby calves. We have a ton of cats. I'm still a little bit of a cat lady, but I'd love to go out and see my cats. And we had two big dogs at the time, and they'd follow us around the barnyard. And it was just kind of being around those animals, loving them with all your heart, stopping to give them pets, stopping to give them scratches, stop to give them names. Everyone had a name when you're little. And just, you know, growing into that, as you get older, you know, like you have distractions because you get in high school and then you're doing sports and you have grades you got to keep up, but still being able to come home and see the animals and seeing all that stuff you grow up with still being a constant in your life, I think is super duper important. And it's kind of something my older brother, I think mentioned, all three of us are back on the farm now. But he was talking about, like, you know, he went out into the world, he went to school and he worked an internship. But like when you come home to the farm, like it's still there, you know, things change, but you still have the farm and you still have all those animals that you've been taking care of throughout your life. Right now we have a couple of cows that are 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
They're born in 2012. They're beautiful, wonderful cows. Their names are Coconut and Annie. They're super sweethearts. But there are sweet little old ladies, but you have to think, like, they would have been born around 2012. I would have been in middle school. I fed them their bottles when they were babies. I feed their daughters now that they have babies. One of them's, her daughter just had a calf the other day. So now we have a grandbaby that we're taking care of too. But it's just, you know, seeing those generations of animals and being able to be involved in their lives, I think is really, really important to us.
Oh, that really, I don't know, that struck a chord with me because sometimes you don't really think about that. But in dairy farming, I mean, you know, you are producing from those animals and, you know, you're going to keep them. And now you have a multi-generational farm in a number of ways, your family and then this family of cows, which, you know, has never really like occurred to me, but now I have this image in my head that I just absolutely adore and I'm going to hold with me for sure. You know, and I'm wondering, well, let me kind of go through your trajectory because I want to talk specifically about your farming methods and whatnot a little bit later. So I'm going to hold that, and, you know, talk a little bit about your time in 4-H because, you know, you showed calves and as well as a kid too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how was that different, you know, being involved in 4-H, how was that different than just doing the stuff that you would do around the farm as a kid?
So the thing about 4-H is it gives you a bit of community as well. You're surrounded by other kids who have similar interests to you. And I went to school in the city. I'm from just south of La Crosse area. So when me and my brothers went to school, we were the only farm kids there. There were about 1,000 kids in our high school. We were the only farm kids. This is actually the first year that our school has had an FFA as long as I've known it. I'm a little bummed because it came after us, but it's so great to be able to see agriculture being brought in as an opportunity for the youths in the area. But really circling back to your question, a bit of the difference between 4-H is it helps you find a new place of pride in what you do, and it gives you a different version of responsibility. So when you're on the farm, like your responsibility is to take care of the animals, and you're working for the end of the day to produce food to feed the world. Dairy farmers are the 1% feeding the 100%. 4-H is kind of the intersection of like responsibility and hobby. It teaches you to
I love that.
Find something you enjoy and take pride in it and put effort into making something out of it. So I showed cows when I was in 4-H. I loved my show cows. Back to that generation thing. I think I have one show cow that's still around now. I haven't shown in 6 years now. She's still here, but I have all those generations of calves that came from those original show animals, which is so great to see. Because all their babies have names, and I keep track of them. And I'm like, oh, she's just like her mom, or she's just like her grandma. But anyways, when you're working, so I'm halter breaking calves again right now. But when you're showing an animal, you have to train the animal to walk on a halter. That's a fun task, especially when you're 9 years old.
What is that when you, for people that have no idea what that is?
Yeah, so a halter, typically, so for show, you're going to use a leather style halter, but typically you're breaking them in on a rope halter. They're really fun colored woven plastic halters nowadays. There's also some that I believe are just typical rope. But it's, I don't really know how to describe it. There's a loop of it that goes around the muzzle. You have to have it sitting up just right so that their mouth still has motion and it sits comfortably on it. And then there's a second loop that wraps up behind the ears of the animal so it secures their head. And then it's just kind of like walking a dog. If anyone's ever done that, you just take your cow out and you get to walk them up and down the yard, through the fields, along the road. You can walk them wherever you want.
So how was that for a 9 year old that might not be, the cow might be taller than the kid?
Yeah. First of all, you're probably gonna need your parents' help. Dad can only do so much sometimes. So it's a lot of patience. You're going to be walking. The first thing I always do is get the calf out of the pen, tie him up somewhere and just brush them. So they get used to you. Okay. You got to show them that you're harmless, brush them down good. Scratch them in the right places, like let them feel calm, let them get used to you as a person. Because, I mean, you're trying to form a bond with this animal and they become really special to you and you want to be just as special to them. So the first thing I try to do when I'm working with them is really just start to build a connection. The second thing I do is you got to break them to walk. So rather than fight them, I let them lead me at the beginning. So I let them go wherever they want. I'm still in control. I'm holding the rope, but I'll let them go wherever they want. And usually they want to run. So we go running, running, running all up and down the hills, wherever they want to go. And usually they tire out at some point. And around that point, they'll let me start to walk them around instead. So then maybe for 10 to 20 minutes, I'll just walk them wherever I want to go just so they get used to me leading them around. And then I'll put them back in their pen, maybe give them some hay and a little extra water. You know, they just had a good workout and I'll put them away and I'll get them out again the next day. And one thing I notice is that on really sunny days, they like to sit at the gate and wait for me to show up because they want to go outside so bad. Oh. And they're so excited to go on their little walk because, you know, even with pasture and everything, our cows get to go out on pasture, but even with the pasture and everything, they still want to go out exploring other parts of the farm as well. And they really get used to you and they love their scratches from you and they know they get little treats every now and then. And sometimes when I go to put them away, they don't even want to go back. They want to go for more walks. But that's kind of what it's like to break an animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it shows that you obviously have built such a, like you said earlier, bond with these animals, which, you know, I'm sure comes full circle. And I can see why you would want to come back to the farm to spend more time with those animals after going to, you went to University of Wisconsin-Madison, right? And you studied dairy science and communications, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
So you were going to be ready, and you had a very important internship at Organic Valley.
Yes, I did.
What was that experience like, having an internship there?
So my sophomore year of college, I'd kind of thought about applying to an internship, but then COVID happened and I decided to pass on it for the year. I was like, I don't want to have to do something that might not turn out the way I want it to just because everything's virtual and I'm not going to be able to get those in-person aspects. And I thought it would benefit me more to be home on the farm with my family. Mm-hmm. So my sophomore year, I decided no internship. So then my junior year, also because of my program, my dairy science major, we were required to do an internship. So my junior year, I thought Organic Valley or bust. I went to all of the internship events at school, and I kept refreshing the Google hiring page, waiting for them to post the internships. And I think it was beginning of October, they finally started putting some out. So I applied for three of them, all in three different departments. And I wrote cover letters and I got my resume together. And I'd never really applied for a job before. And my parents kind of hadn't either, because my mom had been at the same job for 21 years at this point, and my dad was self-employed. So I reached out to some of my relatives, like, how do I apply for a job? Mm. But I applied and I managed to get an interview, and I was super, super, super excited for that. And I actually got to meet Liz McMullen at that point. Me and Liz are still very close, and I like talking to her all the time. But I first met her in that initial interview, and then about a week later.
For people that don't know Liz, who is Liz?
Liz McMullen works in public relations at Organic Valley. She is my partner in crime right now for this podcast. So for the listeners, Liz is also listening in right now while we're recording.
That's right. Yes, yes, indeed. And she is great. I've had a chance to talk with Liz as well.
Oh, she is awesome. She is not seen and not heard, but her influence is felt.
Absolutely. I mean, and it sounds like, you know, her influence was felt, and this internship had a real impact on you, bringing together, you know, both your love for the farm, for, you know, your dairy science degree, as well as your communications degree that you were working on.
Yeah, I managed to get the internship, and I was super, super excited. And I got put in the cash and office building, which is like 20 minutes from my family farm, which was so cool, because then I had the opportunity to be able to be home-ish and like work on the farm when I wanted to, needed to. But then also I had this awesome opportunity of really getting to tap into that communication side of my major, mm-hmm. And that my interests lie there as well. So I think it was really important to me to be able to have the opportunity to flesh out maybe a little bit of those talents, a little bit of that interest. So I did get to work in public relations, is where I was officially hired as the PR intern. And I got to do a lot of cool stuff. I got to put out communications for the company across employees and to stakeholders. I got to work a little bit with their LinkedIn page, make a couple posts for them. I got to help Liz find journalists to pitch stories to using Muckrack. Mm-hmm. If anyone's familiar with that, it's a website used to connect with journalists to help pitch stories. And another cool thing is it was coming off of an election year. So there's a few fun little political things going on in the area with representatives. And I got to be involved in a few of those. Which was super cool to be able to meet those people and connect with them and have the merging of agriculture and my interests in agriculture while also doing this public relations work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then tell me about FarmCam.
So because I did my internship, I actually got to sit in on some of the Organic Valley side of FarmCam, but I'll get more into that in a sec. But I met all these awesome people who worked in marketing and worked in social media at Organic Valley, which was super cool. And I still talk to them today. But FarmCam is Organic Valley's, I'm going to say, social media collection point. So farmers are able to make content and submit it to FarmCam, at which point the social media employees in the office will look over the content, see what they like, see what they could maybe work on a little bit, and then decide whether or not they want to post it onto social media channels. So that's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of those different social media apps Organic Valley has channels on. So mm-hmm. FarmCam has been super awesome for me because it allows me to still use some of my communication skills that I developed in school and create content to send to Organic Valley to be then featured on their channels and sent out to help market our food and show the public kind of what we do on our farms, but also that we can have some fun while we are farming.
That I have not yet checked out FarmCam, and I absolutely must, because I can only imagine that it's got to be an absolute blast. Can you describe any of the stuff you've done for FarmCam that's been shared on Organic Valley's channels?
Yeah, so kind of going with how social media works, a lot of these videos are fairly short and to the point because, you know, consumers of social media have such a short time span or attention span that you have to be able to capitalize on it as effectively as possible. So one of my more recent ones that came out is a Valentine's Day one. I do farmer pickup lines. I have a funny little headband on and I have like a cows in one of them, my dog, the farm dogs in one. One of them, there's a kitten sitting on my shoulder. If you do see that one, his name is Cheese and he follows me around everywhere and he's super duper cute. Another one I've done, I did one out in the snow. I did a outfit of the day in the middle of a snowstorm and I just go over all the layers that I'm wearing and it's really cold outside and you can see the snow blowing in the video too. Those are a couple of recent ones. Some of the older ones I've done, there's one we did for National Farmers Day a couple of years ago and it's me and a few other farmers. We're doing like a little fun transition with milk glasses. Like I start it and I go, "Hi, my name's Sabrina and I'm your Organic Valley dairy farmer." And I take a swig of milk and I cheers to the camera and then it switches to another farmer. I believe the second one is Jordan Setlid. She's a farmer out of Ohio. Really, really awesome guy. Really, really cool farmer. He has a ton of content on there as well. One other one that I've done is I have one where one of the cats followed me out to pasture to bring cows in. That one's super cute. And then there's one other one where I'm cultivating corn and I kind of talk about, oh, this is why and how we cultivate corn. And it's just, it's cool stuff. And there's so much diversity in it because it's farmers across the country. We have farmers from Vermont sending content in. We have farmers from Ohio sending content in, Wisconsin. There's a farmer in Idaho who sends in content every now and then. But it's just cool stuff. And it's really interesting to see the diversity among our farmers in terms of age, in terms of lifestyle, in terms of what they're doing in their life. I'm fresh out of college. I don't have kids yet. I'm not married. But some of these farmers are like already have young kids on the farm and they're in their 30s. I'm in my 20s. Every now and then you'll have a farmer who's maybe in his 50s or 60s and they'll release content on them every now and then. But it's cool to see how farming is evolving with the new generation because, you know, in these modern times, agriculture is often thought of something of the past, like, you know, old tractors and plowing in the dirt and all that stuff. And, you know, like suspenders and overalls and a straw hat. That's not what farming is anymore. It is a really, really awesome field to be involved in, field pun intended. It's a really awesome career field to be involved in. And there's so much technology coming out in agriculture all the time, just from health stuff to mechanics to new technologies just being developed to help us become an efficient agriculture and food supplier. So, I mean, it's really, really cool stuff.
Well, it is really cool stuff. And it's very cool, as you said, that you have this sort of diversity in many ways, geographically, ethnically, you know, gender, throughout the folks that are at least, you know, contributing to the Organic Valley's social media stuff on FarmCam, but it's capturing a much larger you know, much, much larger theme. And I wanted to touch upon, you know, since we're talking about young people in farming, I know that you are on the executive committee of something called Generation Organic at Organic Value, and you're its youngest member. What's your role there within that committee? And what does that mean for you as its youngest member and its and a more, you know, a different perspective, different voice in that context?
Yeah. So since I've gotten on Geno, it's really shifted its focus. We had a little bit of turnover in members. We've had turnover in our staff member who was working with us as well. So I really think it's evolving into something new. And that's kind of what happens to committees like this over time.
What's the purpose of the committee?
Yeah. So originally Generation Organic was founded as a marketing campaign to show consumers, the younger farmer generation coming in. And this was in the early 2000s. So as the youngest member, we were talking recently, some of the members are almost 10 years older than me. And we were talking about, oh, when I was in high school, and I was like, oh, I was six.
Right.
And just fun little things like that.
20 years, but, time flies.
Yeah, so I was a little kid when this group was getting started, and I think in the late 2015s, so like just before 2020, that 2015-2020 range, it started shifting gears to become less of a marketing thing to more of a like leadership involvement and education for farmers. It became more of a community for young farmers within the co-op. So at that point, they started reaching out to new farmers a little more, trying to get people more involved in it. They started offering these Third Thursday calls where members of Geno and the co-op, so like farmers between the age of 18 and I believe 36, were invited onto these calls to discuss emerging technology, discuss techniques that can be used on farms, implementation of new systems, just kind of chat things over and help people learn about new farming methods so that they can better themselves and better their farms. More recently, we're trying to do a shift of gears, and we're focusing more on leadership, not only for farmers in their community, but farmers in the co-op. So actually, there is a call going on today where we're bringing in Julia Ugo, who is in charge of farm resources here in Organic Valley, and she's going to be talking a bit on the governance structure of Organic Valley in terms of how farmers can be involved in decision-making for the co-op. So unfortunately, I have to miss that meeting today, but it's really, really cool, and I think it's a really awesome meeting to really get these young farmers to, because it can show them, like, these are the first steps you can take if you want to be involved in the co-op more. So yeah, as the younger member, honestly, I think for me, it's just been really awesome to find role models. My job as well is to help bring other people my age into it, because some of these people are going to be aging out in the next few years. And it's important to bring, you know, like bring the next generation of young farmers in there, you know, the next generation of the next generation, right?
Right, absolutely. And now, how do you feel your role is, not just as a young farmer, but as a young female farmer? You know, how are you then, you know, being mentored, but then paying it forward and trying to mentor the next generation of young women interested in farming?
So through my time on Geno, there have been, so there's, I believe there's nine of us. There are nine members of the board, or the EC, the executive committee. And while I've been on, there's been two other young women. One of them is a few years older than me. She recently decided that she didn't want to run for re-election, and she's doing a lot of other stuff locally for her ag community. So she's doing new things. And then there's another woman on there. She, I think, is 10 years older than me. Super, super cool farmer. She's out in Vermont. And I'm really excited I get to work with her. So I like to think of those two right now are kind of like role models for me. Just kind of see how they navigate the agriculture community. how they take care of some of that family aspect. You know, I have brothers. I think neither of them have brothers back on the farm with them. But just that dynamic of being a woman in agriculture is super, super interesting. And I would say, you know, Jenno, I've been trying to reach out to other young women to get them involved, but I think I have more of an impact with other women in agriculture through a group I was in college called the Association of Women in Agriculture.
Oh, yes.
And that's based out of UW-Madison. And I was actually at their alumni event this past weekend. But that is an impressive network of women in agriculture. And it's been around since the 70s. So there is an awesome membership in the alumni of just older members willing to give back and help mentor the next generation of women in agriculture. Because, you know, if you've been following basketball, Caitlin Clark has been everywhere. Yes. And she said recently, yes, like, thank you to the women who knocked down the door so I can walk in. And, mm-hmm, you know, I'd like to say thank you to all the women agriculturists who came before me, because, you know, that's a trailblazing community to be involved in for women. Because, yeah, even now, most of the men, or most of the people involved in agriculture, are men. They're the farmers, they're the salesmen, they're the field reps. And slowly but surely, like, women are coming back to the farm. And even if they're not coming back to the farm, they're coming back to the industry. Mm-hmm. They're the ones sitting in the office, taking the calls, making sure feed gets on farms, making sure people are buying and selling product the way they need to be. I was talking to a woman this weekend at that event, and she was on the board of directors for a company called Central Star. It's kind of changed name over time, but right now I believe it's called Central Star. And they are a huge, huge genetic company, and they're worldwide. And she was the only woman on the board of directors for a long, long time. And just hearing her story about how, you know, you have to fight for your place sometimes, which, you know, mm-hmm, is hard. But if you want to do this stuff, like, just do it, right? So being able to hear from them and kind of hear their stories and see where they are now is always just so inspiring. And it makes you think to yourself, I can do it. I'm chronically online. I say I spend a little too much time on social media sometimes, but Jodi Picou, I believe her last name is pronounced, the author, the famous author, has an audio right now that's trending. And it's her going, oh, I wanted to write a book. And I was like, how hard can it be? Men do it. And then she was like, how hard can it be? Men do it. And, you know, that's another just, you know, awesome stuff. Women supporting women, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like you have an incredible network of women, of mentors, of people that are sharing their expertise. And as you said, being inspiring and certainly inspiring me as I'm talking to you. And now, you know, you're there. You are back on the farm full time, right? As the herd manager there at your family farm, Hamburg Hills in Wisconsin. It is an organic farm. And I guess how long has it been an organic farm? Let me ask that.
So our family converted the farm to organic in 2007.
What was that process like?
The transition phase is really hard because you have to go through a few years where you are doing all organic inputs, but you're being, mm-hmm, paid as though you are still a conventional farm.
Right.
So, I mean, when you go to the grocery store, you know organic milk is going to be a little more money than conventional milk, which is, you know, your typical standard Kemp's milk, Fairlife. That's all just conventional milk.
Right.
But, I mean, you know that organic milk is going to be a little more than conventional milk because it's considered a premium product. Well, same with all of the feeds, all of the medicine, everything that goes into raising those animals and taking care of them, that is all also considered a premium product. So we are paying premium prices to raise what was still considered a conventional food product.
How long does that last, that conversion process, where you're putting out something and not getting that same value added back?
Yeah, so that takes about 3 years
wow.
because your fields all have to be transitioned over. So all of the soil, all of the grasses growing in those fields, everything that you are raising to feed your animals has to go through a 3-year transition phase. The animals also have to go through a 3-year transition phase, making sure they're being fed organic food for that time. Actually, the cows might be 2 years. I'd have to double check. But we're going to go with 3 years for now.
Okay.
But they have to be fed all organic. Any health treatments have to be organic for that period of time. And once you get through that, then your herd and all of your fields and such are considered organic, and they have to be maintained as such. My family practices what's called a closed herd, which means there's no other animals entering our herd. So you can only enter new animals into your herd if they are considered organic. If they are conventional, then they have to go through that transition phase before they're able to be considered and part of the organic herd. But overall, there's so much paperwork and record keeping that you have to go through, not only to maintain that status of organic, but to convert anything over, that it's really not worth adding any animals into the herd. It's just best to maintain that closed herd status.
That makes a lot of sense. Why did you all decide that you wanted to go from conventional to organic about what, 17, 18 years ago now?
So it started with my dad, I believe. Our area, so I'm from what's called the Driftless region of Wisconsin, specifically the Cooley region. And that is the birthplace of Crop Cooperative, which is the co-op that owns the Organic Valley and the Organic Prairie brand. So that co-op has a very strong influence in our area. And because of that, there are just a ton of Organic Valley farms around us. So because of that, Dad has a ton of friends that are organic farmers and organic producers. And they were, you know, giving him the grief of, oh, dude, you should come over and be organic, you know, do the transition. It'll be worth it in the end. And, you know, planted the seed in Dad's head. And, you know, he kind of ruminated on that, thought it over, and then he took it to my mom. And my mom tests milk for a living. So she is considered a bit of a scientist. She's a pretty cool scientist.
Just a bit of a scientist. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. She's pretty good at what she does too. But anyways, mom was a little skeptical at first, just because of some of the misconceptions she'd heard about organic and, you know, some of the other things she'd heard about it. She was a little nervous at first, but, you know, she was like, let's do it. Okay. So Dad had mom on board. And, you know, they were, it was 2007. I would have been 7 years old. They're a young couple. They'd just bought the farm from my grandpa 5 years ago. So, I mean, they weren't new to farming, but they were new to owning the farm. They had young kids. Like, mom cashed her pension. They were going all in on this. Like, this was the make or break deal for the farm. So yeah, and this was right before 2008 when the housing market crashed and everything got really, really tough. But somehow they managed to ride through it. And you know, one thing we talk about a lot is why kids don't come home to the farm.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's said because their parents don't present it in a good light. They only ever talk about how hard the farm is. Growing up, me and my brothers knew it was hard farming because we were a part of it, but my parents never made us feel like it was the worst thing that could happen to us. You know, it's hard. There's debt. There's economy. There's the devil on your shoulder telling you you're not doing it well enough or you're not going to make it. But my parents never let us learn about that. So going through that transition to organic, I know my parents are going to listen to this later, so I hope I say this right, but I think it was probably one of the hardest things they've ever done was getting through that transition. But once we were through it, Dan said you could see it in the cows. Like, they were happier with this lifestyle. Okay. They were healthier. He said it was a little easier on him, just not having to push and push and push all the time for production. Because that's not one of the focuses of organic farming, is it? It's about the lifestyle and the care for the animal.
You know, you're talking about sort of the value of organic farming and the way that it's impacted the animals and the lifestyle. And as difficult as it was, it sounds like it's definitely something that has paid off in a number of ways. What is it like being part of the Organic Valley family? I mean, it's something that I think most consumers now recognize that brand. I certainly do, on our shelves, in our refrigerators, in grocery stores. To be part of, a co-op partner with Organic Valley and be part of that family, and having, you know, done your internship there, you know, you really are sort of part of that family in a multitude of ways. How is that really, you know, feeling for you now being the herd manager there, on the family farm?
When we finally did officially join Organic Valley, we went through the transition, became organic. We found there is a strong sense of community in the co-op. Mm-hmm. So as members of Organic Valley, we are considered farmer owners. Technically, my dad is the farmer owner because he is our number one contact for Organic Valley. He's when we write down list of contacts, he's the farmer owner. But the thing about Organic Valley is it's all about the farmers. Okay. Our board of directors are all farmers. We have subcommittees made up of farmers. It's always been about the farmers. That's why the co-op was made back in the 80s, was farmers wanted to take charge of producing and selling their food. So going back to that, I said before, it's a strong community. Every year, the co-op tries to find events to bring the farmers together, like-minded people thinking. A couple weeks ago, we just had our annual meeting. Usually, it's in person. Unfortunately, due to some things going on in the co-op right now, it had to be online. But that is usually the biggest event of the year for a lot of the farmers. They get to come out to the La Crosse, Wisconsin area. They get to go see headquarters if they want. They get to meet the employees who do so much for all of us. They're awesome. But it's not even just the farmers. Like I said, you know, Organic Valley is all about the farmers, but we have such a great employee staff here. Our executive team is so strong. We have great employees, and everyone just tries to do their job. And, you know, a year ago we got a new CEO, and you can just, everyone wants to achieve the same goal, not even from the farmer side, but also the employee side. Like, everyone's all walking towards the same goal together. And that is, we want to produce the best food products in the world, and we want to get them to as many people as possible, because we're all passionate about what we're doing, and we want to share that passion with our consumers.
I mean, you're selling me. I do want to ask this. Does Organic Valley, I mean, I'm familiar with the milk, but are there other dairy products that Organic Valley also produces?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked.
This is not a setup.
No.
This is an honest question.
I'm so excited you asked, because I can tell you about my favorite Organic Valley products. So yes, Organic Valley does a ton of cheese, and their cheese is awesome. My favorite are the Jack cheese. I believe it's like a farmer type cheese. It's so, so good. It's super soft. It's white. It has a good, strong flavor to it. It's my favorite cheese to buy as a block. My favorite cheese slice is going to be their new aged raw cheddar.
It's so good.
I love it in sandwiches. I love it on hamburgers. I've been eating it all week on top of meatloaf. It is so good. And then
you're making it for me.
My favorite shredded cheese is going to be the sharp cheddar. I love cheddar cheese. They have different cuts of their shred. So you can get like a typical shredded cheese, or they do a thick cut shred. Oh my gosh. I love the thick cuts.
Oh man.
And then they do also have string cheese.
Oh, you know, I think I've seen the string cheese. I mean, look, yep. my listeners know this because I have had many a cheese and a dairy episode because this is just like where my heart lies. And, you know, my uncle used to call me the little mouse because I ate so much cheese and it has not changed at all. I still eat so much cheese and now I'm thinking about shredded cheddar. Thank you so much for putting that idea in my head. Now I'm going to go with it. And I have a couple bags and now I'm going to have to keep my eye peeled at the store for Organic Valley. This has just been so much fun. I can't let you go without you sharing just a brief kind of insight on what your daily, your day-to-day is there on the farm.
Yeah. So as much as I'd like to keep talking about cheese, because there's a ton of awesome cheeses and other products Organic Valley has.
Can't have the cheese without the cows, man.
Yep, exactly. So my day-to-day on the farm, I do some herd management stuff, but I split the position with somebody else. Her name is Alexis, and she is another young woman out of college on a farm. She wasn't born on a farm, but she's a neighbor girl who came back, and she does a lot of the herd management stuff with me. So my main thing I focus on is calves. I wake up every morning, go to the farm. I feed the baby calves. They're super duper cute. I love them with all my heart. And while I'm feeding calves, I usually feed the cats. I did mention we have barn cats before. I take care of the barn cats in the morning as well. I do have one who sits at the barn door every morning and he waits for me. Blizzard, rainstorm. It's raining in Wisconsin today. He was sitting there waiting for me. He's so cute. I'm getting sidetracked, but that's how my day starts. I take care of the babies. And after that, I go upstairs and we have a computer system that keeps records on our cows. We have two different systems. We have one called Cow Manager, which is a herd health management system. So our cows have an ear tag.
There's technology for everything.
Yes. So this ear tag records like how much they're eating a day, how much water they're drinking, what kind of activity they're doing. Are they ruminating? And that means, is their stomach like functioning properly? So I go upstairs after I feed calves and I check out all the health systems, see if there's any cows that need to be bred, make sure that gets done. I mate the animals, which means I'm just making sure that our cows are getting mated to a sire to be bred to. For genetic reasons. And, you know, then I go to lunch, you know, I like a good early lunch, a lot of science.
And then we just like, you know, just making sure that it's done for genetic purposes. And then I go to lunch. I mean, you make it sound so easy, but I know that there's so much work that goes into it. And, you know, and we just get the end result of the milk and the cheese and it gives, I hope it certainly gives me, I hope it gives our listeners a sense of respect for where our food comes from. And we've just gotten to lunch. So tell us the rest of the day.
Well, kind of go off your comment there. Like I said, farming at the beginning, farming is a labor of love and that love takes effort. But you know, lunch is a good time because I get to stop. I get to talk to my dad, see what maybe we're doing in the afternoon. I get to talk to my brothers, see if they need anything. But yeah, after lunch, come back outside. Afternoons, always up in the air about what we're going to do. Some days I'm washing hutches. Some days we're moving cattle around. We have cows all over the farm. We have animals on different farms. Some of these farms are just pasture. So sometimes we go out to pastures and collect cows or we take cows out to pasture. That's a whole thing. Sometimes in the afternoon, I'm letting cows out to pasture. Summer's almost here. I'm going to be pasturing cows every day, making sure they go out for a few hours, burn off some energy, eat some grass, all that good stuff. Some days the vet comes and she does health checks, make sure everyone's healthy and looking good. Tuesday it poured rain the whole day and we cleaned the entire parlor. We have some offices in our barn as well as an employee break room and a locker room and we swept, mopped and wiped everything down. So it was spotless. But yeah, you know, you never know what's going to happen. I said this once a while back. I find joy in knowing my cows are always going to be in the constant knowledge that my cows are always going to be there and even more joy in knowing that I never know what's going to come next. And, you know, those afternoon days, you never know what's going to come next.
Well, what a great place to end, because, you know, no 2 days are alike. And today it meant that, you know, your farming duties meant sharing your story with me on Eat Your Heartland Out. Sabrina, we're so glad to have had you on the program, and hopefully maybe we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Capri. It was really great to sit down with you, talk about these things, and, you know, learn a little bit of stuff along the way.
Well, I certainly learned as well. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Eat Your Heartland Out. This episode was produced by me, Capri Cafaro. Our audio engineers are Liam Warner and Armin Spengen. Theme music by Jason Shaw. You can learn more about the show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/Eat Your Heartland Out. Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.